It was past noon when Colt turned the buckskin up the narrow lane that led to Dr. Henry Taylor's house. He had left the three horses and their grim cargo tied to the hitching rail in front of the jail. No one had come out to question him when he left the bodies, although there were several people on the street who stopped to gape at the grave rider as he passed. He figured that J.D. was probably eating his noon meal at the Whiskey Hill kitchen.
It'll give him something to help digest his dinner.
The door opened to reveal Dr. Taylor.
Well, Colt, won't you come in? I'm just finishing my dinner.
My brother's been shot. It looks bad, and he needs a doctor right away.
Where is he? Bring him in.
He's at my Uncle Bert's place. He looked too bad hurt to haul him all the way to town.
Well, if you want him treated, you'll have to bring him here. I'm not going to ride out in the middle of that shooting war between you and Drummond's folks.
You'll have to go to Vance. I don't think you understand. You ain't got no choice in the matter, so if you'll get your bag, we'll get started.
I see. It's your intention to force me to go with you.
I reckon so. I was hoping you'd come on your own, but whatever it takes, my brother needs doctoring.
All right. I'll get my bag.
By God, we showed that old buzzard. I think we've done one this war. Drummond ain't got more than 3 or 4 men left. Hell, he ain't got enough men left to take care of all them cattle he's got.
Upon finding out what had happened in the failed raid on Burt's ranch, they counted 5 men that Drummond had lost on that day alone. Burt took the cup of coffee that Rena held out to him and sat down at the table with Vance's 2 cowhands.
Drummond ain't the kind of man to take a whipping lightly. I'm afraid he ain't gonna quit as long as he's standing, and he's got a craw full of coke now, and he can't swallow or spit it out. He ain't gonna be satisfied till one of them's dead.
How come we ain't seen hiding a hair of J.D. Townsend?
Because J.D.'s on the Drummond payroll, same as Tyler or Red or any of them others. Same reason he ain't gone to the army for help. He was most likely ordered to keep the table clear for Drummond's move to own the whole valley.
Susan came in from the back bedroom. They all turned to face her.
He's sleeping now, but he's breathing awfully hard. Ugh.
Exhausted, she sat down at the table beside Bert. Moments later, Rena placed a cup of coffee down before her.
Thank you, Rena.
Colt and the doctor came in.
Oh, thank God. This way, doctor.
The doctor nodded a brisk hello to everyone, then followed Susan back to the bedroom. The others remained at the table to await the prognosis. As Colt sat, Rena set a plate of food before him and poured the dregs of the coffee pot in his cup.
I'll make more.
She went to the pump to refill the pot. That pot was down to less than half full when the doctor finally came out again, followed by Susan.
How is he, Doc?
He was lucky. He's got a serious wound through the upper chest, but it didn't appear to hit his heart or lungs. I can't say much more than it's up to him, I guess. How bad he wants to live, I suppose. Anyway, these next 24 hours will tell the tale. I've done all I can. I've told Susan what to do for him. It's getting dark already. I expect I better be getting along. Marjorie would be worried.
I'll see you back to town. You drink some coffee. I'll get your horse out of the barn.
Susan watched the quiet man as he walked out the door. She hesitated for a moment more, then wrapped a shawl around her shoulders against the cold night air, and she followed him. She met him leading the horses to the house.
Susan?
Colt, I just wanted to thank you for saving our lives.
I'm just glad I was close enough to hear the shooting. Sorry I wasn't closer. Maybe Vance wouldn't have been shot.
He started to walk again.
Wait.
He turned to face her.
I owe you an apology. A debt I can't really repay.
It's all right. Hell, it's my fault Vance is wounded. They were coming after me.
No. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about how you really saved my life. And after I failed you so terribly, you wouldn't have gone to prison if I'd come forward at your trial I'm the one other person who knew where you were that day. I could have saved you, but I was so afraid it would have killed my father if he found out what we did that day. And you never said a word. Vance has no idea that he was not the first, and when you came back, I was sure you hated me so much that you would tell everybody. But you never said a word.
Colt stood silently. What was done was done. What good would it do anyone to bring it out now? He would have preferred that she had not opened that old wound. But since she had, he realized that she wanted forgiveness. And he decided that for what it was worth, he'd give it to her.
Those days are long gone, Susan. I don't think about them anymore. You might as well forget them too.
Mercifully, Dr. Taylor walked out on the porch at that moment.
God damn it!
Frank Drummond's troop of 10 self-proclaimed gunfighters had been thoroughly defeated at every attempt to wipe out a puny force of 5, 3 of whom were old men. He had never before been so defeated, and the anger in him threatened to burst the blood vessels in his neck. He might have enlisted the services of J.D. Townsend and his deputies to go after Colt McRae, but he was concerned that the sheriff might send word of the war to Fort Russell's. He couldn't afford to involve the army in this private conquest. There might be too many questions asked. Drummond was totally convinced that the one catalyst that had put backbone into Bert and Vance McRae was the return of Colt McRae. The thought of the broad-shouldered man with his rifle cradled casually in his arm so infuriated him that he picked up a lamp from a side table and smashed it against the wall. It didn't serve to vent the rage that was eating him up inside, though. His 5 remaining men cowered before his wrath. Even Alice Flynn, his ill-tempered housekeeper, and usually the only person with backbone enough to stand up to him, made no remark as she looked at the broken lamp and the puddle of kerosene on the floor. Without a word, she turned and left the room to fetch some rags. Drummond stood looking out the window, his mind on a man he had heard about from Pete Tyler, his recently departed foreman. After a long moment, he turned to the 5 seated there.
Ronnie, I'm sending you to Denver to find a man for me.
Drummond only knew the man by one name, Bone. Tyler had said that was all anybody knew him by, but every outlaw in Colorado Territory knew of him. He worked out of Denver because he wasn't wanted for anything there. Tyler had described Bone as a hunter and tracker, killer as deadly as a rattlesnake. It had been rumored that Bone had once taken a contract to track down and kill his own brother. It galled Drummond to have to resort to calling in a killer like Bone, but Colt McRae had proven to be a dangerous man to trap. Tyler had said that the only way to contact Bone was to leave a message for him at the Palace Saloon on Cherry Creek.
What if he don't want to come?
You tell him there's $100 in it for him if he'll just come over and talk to me.
Most of men like that want their money up front. Maybe I better have the money with me since he don't know you.
You think I'm a damn fool? I'm not about to send your worthless ass off with $100. You just deliver my message. Tell him Pete Tyler recommended him. He'll come.
You're the boss. I'll fetch him.
You better. I don't want to see you back here without him.
It was a little more than a good day's ride to Denver, but it took Brownie more than half of the following day to find the Palace Saloon. When he did, it was somewhat of a disappointment. Hardly a palace, it turned out to be a small log structure with no sign to identify it, built on an old mining claim by the creek. There was a smaller shack behind it with a lean-to attached. He wouldn't have found it at all had it not been for the directions given him by a local miner. With a slight limp, favoring his wounded leg, Brownie pushed the door of the saloon open and peered into the dark interior. It took a few moments for his eyes to adjust to the poor light. When objects finally began to take definite shape, he could see only a single table near a door in the rear and a roughly built bar facing him. Behind the bar, a huge man with a full beard and a bald head stood stoically staring at him.
What'll it be?
Whiskey.
The massive barkeep blew the dust from a shot glass and poured his drink.
I'm looking for a feller named Bone.
What for?
I got a message for him from my boss.
Who's your boss?
Mr. Frank Drummond, up at Whiskey Hill. Maybe you heard of him?
Brownie tossed his whiskey back.
Nope, I ain't never heard of him. Bone don't come in here no more.
Pete Tyler said to look for Bone here.
This seemed to make a difference. The bartender refilled Brownie's glass.
You know Pete?
I sure do. Me and Pete's been riding for Mr. Drummond for more than a few years. Sorry thing, though. Pete's dead. Shot by a no-good ex-convict. That's why Mr. Drummond sent me to find Bone.
Well, I'll be. Pete Tyler dead. That's bad news, sure enough. Bone ain't hereabouts right now, but he said he'd most likely be back tomorrow.
Well, then, I reckon I'll come back tomorrow, see if I can catch him.
If you want to, you can sleep in that shed out back. You can build you a fire in the open end. Keep you warm enough. There's wood stacked against the wall.
Well, that's mighty neighborly of you. I just might take you up on that.
Not at all. Here, let's have another drink on the house to old Pete Tyler. He was a good one.
The bartender took the bottle from the bar and replaced it with another.
To Pete.
To Pete.
Had Brownie been a man of average intelligence, he might have surmised that he was no longer drinking watered-down whiskey. It didn't take long for the full-strength spirits to addle Brownie's brains, and after a couple of free drinks, he spent what money he had to continue into the evening. Gradually aware of his pounding head, Brownie was reluctant to open his eyes, praying earnestly that he would go back to sleep and wake up again without the feeling like he was gonna throw up. He knew the chances weren't good. He was gonna be sick, just like every other time he'd had too much to drink. To add to his discomfort, his face felt hot, and it seemed to get hotter by the second, until it actually felt like it was burning. Unable to tolerate it any longer, he opened his eyes. His face was barely inches from the fire. To further confuse him, the flames were building higher and higher. Then, a sizable stick of wood fell on the roaring fire, sending sparks and ashes flying.
Oh, Jesus!
Struggling to clear his groggy brain from his alcohol-induced sleep, he became aware of a pair of boots on the opposite side of the fire. His gaze immediately drifted up from the boots to a black coat, open to reveal a gun belt with two pistols, butts forward. Quickly tracing upward from there, his focus settled on a pair of piercing eyes glowering out from under bushy black eyebrows, like two dark orbs set in a pitiless countenance of weathered rawhide. Certain that he was gazing upon Lucifer himself, Brownie cringed before the frightening apparition, fearful that he may have awakened to find himself in hell.
I'm Bone. What do you want?
Totally sober now, Brownie experienced an irresistible urge to empty his bladder, but he was too nervous to move.
Mr. Drummond sent me to fetch you. He's got a job for you.
Mr. Drummond. I don't know no Mr. Drummond. What does he want?
The main job he wants you for is to take care of one man. Colt McCray.
What in hell's the matter with you?
I gotta pee.
Well, get up from there and go piss. I reckon I can see why your boss sent for me.
The ride back to Whiskey Hill was an uncomfortable one for Brownie Brooks. The man called Bone didn't ride beside him, preferring to follow along behind. Brownie could feel the man's piercing gaze upon his back, With his long black coat and his dark hair and a long greasy ponytail adorned with one eagle feather hanging from a wide-brimmed leather hat, Bone fit the image of one of Satan's lieutenants. He never seemed to have thirst or hunger, and might not have stopped all the way back had it not been necessary to rest the horses. He uttered no more than a handful of words, only those absolutely necessary. Brownie had ridden with quite a few bad men in his time. Pete Tyler, Lou George, and Jack Teach came to mind, but none compared to the eerie manner of Bone. Brownie was damn glad to see the front gate of the Rockin' D. Brownie, as was customary among the hired hands, walked to the edge of the front porch and knocked respectfully on the porch floor. Casting a curious glance in his direction, Bone walked up the steps and headed straight for the door. It opened before he reached it, and Frank Drummond came forward, looking the reputed tracker up and down.
You'll be Mr. Bone, I presume?
Just Bone.
Well, Bone, looks like you got here just in time for supper. Come on in the house, and we can discuss some business while we eat. Brownie, Alice just took some chuck down to the bunkhouse. You best hurry if you want to eat, and take care of Bone's horse for him.
Drummond turned and indicated for Bone to enter. Bone didn't move.
Your man promised $100 if I came.
You get it. We'll eat supper first.
I want to see the $100 first.
Fine, let's go inside and I'll get your money out of the safe.
Bone nodded and followed him inside.
I'll get that money.
Without being told, Alice Flynn set another place at the huge table.
Here you are. Please sit down. Eat. This looks wonderful, Alice.
But Drummond found himself alone at the table waiting, while Bone stood in the dining room door counting $100.
Supper's getting cold!
Alice graced him with a disapproving scowl when he sat down, never bothering to remove the leather hat he wore.
Who is he? And what do you want done?
Colt McRae. I want him dead.
One man? What's so special about him? How come you have to send for me to take care of one man?
I've lost 8 men trying to kill that son of a bitch. He's a little more wildcat than you expect. And he doesn't stay in one place long enough for anybody to get to him. That's why I need somebody who's a tracker. My God, I'm running out of men.
What's he worth? This son of a bitch who's so hard to run down.
$200, not counting the $100 I already gave you.
Huh. Shit. That's what I get for going after somebody like Brownie out there. $400, not counting the $100 you already gave me. Take it or leave it.
That's a hell of a lot of money for killing one man. All right. We've got a deal.
Bone ignored the hand and began eating.
What about the law?
Don't worry about the law. I'll take care of that. The sheriff won't get in your way, as long as you don't do anything in town to upset the citizens of Whiskey Hill. The sheriff, he doesn't care what happens out on the range.
Intending to ride quietly into town, buy the ammunition and supplies he needed, and leave as quickly as possible, Colt pulled the buckboard to a stop by the hitching rail at Raymond Fletcher's dry goods store. His uncle had volunteered to make the trip into town, but had to make a choice between that and riding over to Vance's ranch to tend to his nephew's stock. Several quiet days had passed since the shootouts at both ranches had occurred, and Vance was encouraged that maybe the trouble was over. Both Colt and Bert saw it differently, knowing that Drummond was not going to accept his apparent defeat. But since there was a lull in the action, Colt figured they should take advantage of it. Colt got down from the buckboard, taking but a moment to look up and down the nearly empty street, stepped up on the board walkway, and entered the store. Eunice Fletcher glanced up from the counter where she was sorting some new material that had come in. She immediately spun on her heel and retreated to the back room.
Raymond, that murderer is out there in the store.
Raymond, like his wife, had no desire to deal with the ex-convict. But unlike her, he was burdened with the role of man of the family.
Oh, all right, I'll see what he wants.
Tell him he's not welcome in this store. We don't have to cater to his kind.
I'll tend to it. You just stay back here until he's gone.
Colt turned as Fletcher walked in from the back. Mindful of his wife's instructions, the nervous storekeeper was hesitant to pass on her sentiments, but he was also reluctant to greet Colt with the courtesy usually accorded a regular customer. Consequently, he was left in a quandary, the result of which caused him to say not a word, but to gape open-mouthed. Colt handed him a scrap of paper with a list of items his uncle needed.
Uncle Bert will be needing these.
All right.
Fletcher was relieved to have an explanation for his wife as to why he didn't order Colt out of his store. The supplies were for Bert, and Bert was a valued customer. That made a difference. Gathering up the items on the list, Fletcher wasted little time in filling his customer's order. In the sheriff's office, the front door opened and Stoney Yates entered.
Sheriff, you ain't gonna believe who's driving a buckboard down the middle of the street.
Who?
Colt McRae.
The sheriff got up from his chair.
Why, that son of a bitch. I reckon I'd best have a word with him.
In spite of Frank Drummond's efforts to keep the battle between him and the McRaes a private affair, some of the town's citizens knew there was a range war going on. The mayor had asked J.D. point blank why he was not taking action against one or both of the parties involved. J.D. had tried to sidestep the issue by insisting that it had been blown out of proportion, and besides that, it was not affecting the citizens of Whiskey Hill. It didn't help matters when the bodies of three of Drummond's men were found tied to the hitching rail in front of the jail. Roy Whitworth had suggested contacting the army, and J.D. had lied to the mayor when he said he had sent word to Fort Russell already. J.D. walked out onto the dusty street.
I wish to hell Drummond had ended this thing. Hold up there, McRae!
Colt drew back on the reins, pulling the horse to a stop. He picked up the Winchester behind the seat and propped it beside him, a move the sheriff didn't fail to notice.
What can I do for you, Sheriff?
Maybe you can start by telling me about them three dead men you left tied up in front of the jail the other day.
Who said I left them there?
There was two or three folks that saw you leading them down the street.
Maybe I found them outside of town and just dropped them off at the jail. Figured you let Drummond know they were his men. How you figure they got shot, Sheriff? I figure they must have been out hunting and surrounded a bunch of antelope and wound up shooting each other.
Mister, you might think you can buffalo me, but you just might find yourself a guest in my jail.
For breaking what law? Oh, I forgot. You don't have to break a law to get locked up in Whiskey Hill. Now, can I be on my way?
Frustrated, but not to the point of challenging, the steady hand resting on the rifle barrel, J.D. stepped back from the buckboard.
I think it's best if you just ride on out of town now. You ain't welcome in Whiskey Hill.
You know, I expect I might fancy a cup of coffee before I make the trip back to Broken M.
Colt had no particular desire for coffee, actually. But he was damn tired of people telling him to get out of town. When he came to the Whiskey Hill kitchen, he had just about cooled his temper enough to forget the spiteful cup of coffee. But something changed his mind.
Colt!
Colt turned to see Mary Simmons standing in the doorway of the dining room. He pulled up before the door. She walked out to the edge of the board sidewalk, a broad smile across her face.
Well, I see they haven't run you out of the territory yet.
No, but it ain't been for lack of trying.
You must be as ornery as they all say. Pearl and I have been telling them. You didn't seem the kind to cut and run.
Mary didn't mention the fact that Pearl also said he'd be a damn fool if he didn't. It was an ill-kept secret that Frank Drummond wanted him gone, and J.D. was usually quick to do Drummond's bidding. Colt climbed down.
Is that a fact? Well, I expect I could use a cup of that stuff you folks pass off as coffee.
Well, come on in. I just made a fresh pot not more than 15 minutes ago. Pearl might even be persuaded to scramble some eggs for you.
Just coffee'll do.
Well, look who's here. Thought you'd be dead by now.
Is that so? Sorry to disappoint you.
You got more than your share of sand, ain't he, Mary?
That's a fact.
Mary filled a cup from the pot on the stove.
Here you are, Cole.
Thank you.
Notching a wide grin on Pearl's face, accompanied by an impish nod toward the kitchen back door, Mary glanced in that direction in time to see it closing. Oscar had ducked out the back, heading for the sheriff's office.
We might be seeing J.D. any minute.
He's already seen me. He told me to get out of town. That's the main reason I stopped here for coffee.
Well, I like that. I thought you just wanted to see me and Pearl.
That too, I reckon.
Pearl walked over to stand directly in front of Colt.
Colt, what the hell's going on out there? All they've been talking about in the back room is some kind of range war going on. Dead men showing up at the sheriff's office. One of Drummond's men with a bullet in his leg. You bringing Tom Mosley in with a gunshot. And now I hear your brother Vance was shot. What the hell's going on? J.D. says it ain't nothing that concerns Whiskey Hill.
It's kind of simple. Somebody's trying to take land that belongs to other folks, and those folks ain't inclined to let them have it.
It ain't right. J.D. ought to do something about it.
I just assume he didn't, because I know which side he'd be on. Damn fine coffee. Well, I'd best be gone. It's already going to be after dark by the time I get back. How much should I owe you?
Pearl waved off his attempt to pay. Mary walked him to the kitchen door.
Colt, you be careful. They're out to get you. Don't stay away so long.
Colt glanced down to look directly into Mary's eyes, and he smiled.
I'll get back to see you. You can count on that.
Pearl came over to stand by the door with Mary.
Honey, that man attracts trouble like a horse turd attracts flies. And you're looking to find yourself some trouble if you keep giving him those sheep eyes.
I was not! But I still think he's a lot nicer than everybody makes him out to be.
Look, Oscar's back. Came to throw Colt out.
Stoney galloped in through the front gate of the Rockin' D Ranch and slid to a stop at the porch, his horse lathered. Turning, he saw Drummond and two men coming from the barn. He immediately ran to meet
him. McCray. Colt McCray just left Whiskey Hill, driving a buckboard.
Rafe, you and Slim get mounted right away. If you hurry, you might catch McCray before he gets to the other side of Pronghorn Canyon.
Is that the man you hired me to kill?
It is.
Them two are most likely going to get in my way.
Bones started to head back to the barn to get his horse.
Hold on! Things have changed.
Changed? I thought we had a deal.
I was going to hire you to track McCray and kill him. I don't need you to track him when he's riding down the road on a buckboard. My boys can take care of a simple bushwhacking job.
We had a deal.
We never shook on it. You ain't lost nothing anyway. You got $100 just for taking a ride up from Denver. I'll give you an extra 50 for your trouble. It's too late to start back tonight, so you're welcome to stay here for supper. Start back in the morning.
Hardly appeased, Bone shrugged and turned and went to the bunkhouse. Drummond grinned, pleased that he had saved the cost of the killer's fee. Colt set the horse's nose on the trail leading back toward the Broken M and Bar M ranges. thoughts of Mary Simmons filling his mind. The young woman had a way about her. He couldn't decide if she was pretty or not. She was certainly attractive with those dark eyes that so easily captured his attention. And hair as dark as her eyes.
This ain't the time to be thinking about a woman, McCray. Get your mind back on the business at hand.
But he found that was not so easily done. Already he had lingered in town longer than he had intended.
I just hope this horse of Uncle Bert's knows his way home in the dark.
Pronghorn Canyon was not really a canyon at all. In reality, it was a shallow ravine almost a mile long that served as a buffer between Crooked Creek and the open range beyond. In fact, no one knew whence the name had come. As far as anyone could remember, there had been no abundance of pronghorn there. Colt drove the buckboard along the center of the ravine, intending to veer off to the east at the end. To remain on a straight course would take him to the Rockin' D range. He had traveled approximately halfway through Pronghorn Canyon when a big, almost full moon rose over the distant hills, bathing the ravine floor with moonlight.
Uncle Bert's gonna worry about me.
Colt's reaction to the sudden gunfire was automatic.
Yeah!
He crouched down in the front of the seat, calling for all the speed the sorrel could give him. Suddenly, he felt a solid blow against his side. He sprawled sideways on the floor, losing the reins as he fell. The sorrel was hit and tumbled, throwing the buckboard upside down, spilling the contents, including the man. By miracle or instinct, he was able to hang on to his rifle as he sailed through the air, landing hard on the canyon floor. Still no idea of how many or from where. He lay on the ground trying to regain the breath that the fall had pounded from his lungs. The numbness in his side began to sting. He grabbed his side, only to pull it away again, covered with blood. Off to one side, the buckboard lay smashed, the dead horse still in the traces. He had his rifle, but no extra cartridges. There were cartridges somewhere in the parcels that had been scattered, but he could not see them. With nothing but the pain in his side, which seemed to be getting progressively worse, he struggled to get to his feet. Colt had taken no more than a few steps when the riders charged down from the dark side of the ravine. He dropped to one knee. With no time to aim properly, his shots failed to hit a target, but they served to halt the charge. He could see now that there were two of them. Taking advantage of their hesitation, he retreated as quickly as he could up the opposite slope. Bolder now that their quarry was on the run, the two riders urged their horses up the slope after him. Colt fired at the foremost rider, knocking him off his horse. The remaining assailant wheeled his horse around and retreated to the ravine floor. Certain that if he stayed put, he was bound to get hit again. Colt opened up with his rifle, causing the gunman to back even farther away.
Yeah.
With no other option, Colt forced himself to scramble up over the side of the ravine, back in the direction of Crooked Creek. At Drummond's, Alice Flynn had cleaned up the kitchen and retired to her room, although the evening was still young. Hearing the approaching horses, Drummond hurried from his parlor to the front porch. Rafe slid to a stop. He was leading Slim's horse with a body across the saddle. Drummond's first thought upon seeing the body was gratification that they'd been quick enough to cut McCray off. Slim was obviously dead, but Drummond was willing to lose a man in exchange for the elimination of his main source of irritation. Then he saw the look on Rafe's face.
No! Damn you, you let him get away?
I couldn't help it. He's too damn good with that rifle. We almost got him. It killed his horse, and I'm pretty sure I hit him once. He's on foot and wounded.
Ought to be dead by now.
Why in the hell didn't you follow him to make sure? I told you to make sure he was dead.
Well, sir, it was dark, and he had the high ground up on that ridge. And him and that rifle...
Shit, go to the bunkhouse and get Bone. Never mind, I'll fetch him myself. You get rid of that body and get ready to take Bone to where you lost McCray.
Charging in the door of the bunkhouse, Drummond was met by Brownie, who had also heard Rafe ride in.
Where is he? Bone, where is he?
Brownie pointed to the back corner of the bunkhouse.
Yonder. He's asleep.
Well, wake him up.
We pretty much been letting him be. He said anybody that woke him up was liable to get shot.
Drummond started toward the back of the building.
Turn that lantern up.
Approaching the sleeping man, he stopped several feet short.
Hell, he's awake.
No, sir, he's asleep.
Drummond stared at the menacing figure, his back propped up, almost in a sitting position, his arms crossed before his chest, with a pistol in each hand.
His eyes are open.
That's the way he sleeps, with his eyes open.
Drummond looked from his ranch hand back to the sleeping man. Sure enough, Bone's eyes were really only half open. The man was asleep.
Bone! Bone! Wake up, man!
Just to be safe, they both took a couple of steps back. Finally, there was a flicker in the drooping eyelids. Then, instead of the violent reaction they expected, he slowly rolled his eyes upward, his arms slowly unfolding to point the pistols in front of him. The awakening was mindful of a possum coming out of its defensive sleep instead of a lion suddenly awakened.
God, what the hell do you want?
Drummond hurriedly told him of the unsuccessful attempt on Colt's life by his men and the necessity to find him before he was able to escape.
So now you want me to go after this Jasper? Well, the price just went up $100.
Whoa! Why in hell would it? If anything, the job's a hell of a lot easier. Rafe says McCray's wounded, and he's on foot. He ought to be easy enough to follow.
Then why didn't he bring him back? Fact is, a wounded man can be more dangerous, like running down a wounded bear or elk. That's why the price went up. And tracking a man on foot is harder than tracking a horse, especially at night.
All right, you get your extra money. But you gotta get going before the trail gets colder than it already is. Rafe can take you to pick up his track. Brownie, you go with him.
Colt's eyes flickered open, and he awakened, blinking several times to focus.
Oh, shit.
He was alarmed that he had been asleep. It was still dark. He had stopped to rest for a few moments, not to sleep. He couldn't guess how long he'd been out, but the moon was still high, so it couldn't have been too long. He started to roll over on his side, but he stopped short when the pain in his ribs caused him to reconsider. He listened for sounds of pursuit.
They have to know I was hit, so they won't quit until they find me. Where the hell am I? Somewhere on the east side of Crooked Creek, probably. I can't have gotten far from Pronghorn Canyon. I can't stay here.
He struggled to get on his feet, one hand clutching his bloody side. He realized then that his rifle was gone.
I must have lost it somewhere before it blacked out.
Pausing a moment to steady himself, he tried to remember which way he had come. With no hope of finding the rifle now, he took the first likely avenue of escape, forcing himself to ignore the pain that screamed out at him with each step he took. He plunged into the head-high brush that rimmed the crest of a deep gully. Branches snatched at him and caught in his clothing until he finally lost his footing on the steep slope and tumbled head over heels to the bottom. Unable to move for a moment, he just lay there and listened. He heard him above him, with his empty rifle far behind him on the ridge, and no chance of outrunning their horses. He could only lie there and wait, hoping the darkness hit his trail down the side of the gully.
He can't be far ahead of us. Hell, he's bleeding like a stuck hog. Judging by the blood all over that rock back yonder, I'd say he can't get much farther.
The son of a bitch has likely just crawled off and died. We're most likely following a dead man. Might as well go on back.
The hell we will. I'm getting paid to drag his dead ass back to your boss. We'll keep following this ridge. It's bound to be along here somewhere. The man's bleeding out. He won't last much longer.
Reaching once again for strength in a well that was rapidly running dry, Colt forced himself to his feet. Following what appeared to be a small game trail, he made his way painfully down the gully, carefully placing each foot in the darkness. Nearing the mouth of the gully, he began to stagger drunkenly. He knew he had a little strength left and was making his way on determination alone. Soon, his mind began to reel and his head began to swirl, and suddenly, everything went black. Dewey Jenkins burst through the door of the tiny church by the creek.
Hey, some of you fellers give me a hand. There's a man out here hurt bad. Or dead. I ain't sure which.
Out where?
There were only five men in the church, but all five immediately responded to Dewey's call for help. Pearl Murray placed her hymnal on the bench beside her and turned to talk to the other women. Outside, Dewey led the other men back beyond the buckboards and wagons to the narrow wagon trace that led up from the creek.
I dang near run over him. If my horse hadn't drawn back, I reckon I would have. Here he is.
Oh, great Lord, is he dead?
One of the men dropped down to his knees beside Colt's still frame.
Yeah, he's still breathing, but he's awful bloody.
Who is it?
I don't know. Let's get him inside.
They carried Colt inside the church.
Lay him on the bench there. And someone bring that lantern over here so we can see what's what.
Looks to me like he's been shot.
The others crowded in closer in an attempt to see for themselves.
Maybe he's running from somebody. Probably the law.
Maybe we better send somebody in town to fetch the sheriff. He might be an outlaw.
Pearl Murray shouldered Dewey aside and bent close over the victim.
Get out of the way, Dewey. That's Colt McCrae. He ain't no outlaw. And most likely Drummond's hired killers did this. They may still be after him. We gotta help him. Someone shut that door!
15 minutes later, the church door was flung open and slammed against the wall. Fearful faces turned to meet their rough visitors as Drummond's gunmen swaggered into the church. Led by the menacing figure of Bone, they stood inside the door, leering at the handful of worshippers who stared wide-eyed at the intruders.
Come on in and join us, brother.
Bone didn't reply at once. He walked up to Jenkins, scanning the small group of settlers as he did.
You the preacher?
No, sir. We don't have a regular preacher. I'm just leading the singing. You and your friends are welcome to join in our worshiping service.
We're looking for somebody. He's got a bullet hole in him and he might come this way.
Well, we ain't seen nobody.
You wouldn't be lying to me now, would you, preacher?
Before Dewey could answer, Bone suddenly whirled around to confront a tiny, frail woman near the front bench.
How about you, sweet pea? Have you seen a wounded man come in here?
The woman, too frightened to answer, simply drew away, terrified. Bone thrust his face inches from hers.
Well?
Get your sorry ass out of here!
Startled, Bone looked up to find Pearl Murray standing and pointing a threatening finger at him.
There ain't nobody here you're looking for. We're trying to hold a prayer meeting. So get on out of here and let us get on with it. I'd like to get home sometime tonight. I gotta go to work in the morning. I ain't got no time to waste on your foolishness.
Bone remained silent for a few moments while he fixed the gutsy woman with a sarcastic grin. Amused by her bluster, he failed to notice a slight nervous waver as she stole a quick glance down at the thin trickle of blood on the plank floor, slowly making its way toward the front of the room.
Oh, you're a mouthy bitch, ain't you? All right, go back to your hand, Folden. Let's go, boys.
Not one of the modest gathering moved a muscle.
All right, Somebody help me get him out from under my feet. We'll put him in my buggy.
What are you aiming to do? Take him to Doc Taylor's?
I reckon that's what he needs, all right. But that would be the same as handing him over to Drummond's gang outlaws.
Pearl drove her buggy with a wounded man back to the simple cabin her husband had built 2 years before he died.
I guess Drummond's wolves finally caught up with you. What happened?
I got bushwhacked on my way back from town.
Well, let's see if we can patch up. I'd take you to see Dr. Taylor, but that might not be the best thing for you. As soon as J.D. found out, you'd most likely get a visit from that trash that came in the church looking for you. That one that did all the talking is a new face to me. I ain't never seen him before. Oh, he looks like a mean one. I think Drummond must have bought himself a professional killer.
Colt lay on a bed with a blanket spread over him.
I appreciate what you're doing for me. I just need a little time to get my strength back. And then I'll move on. I don't want to bring any bad luck down on you.
Don't worry about that. Don't nobody know where you are. Those folks at the church ain't gonna say nothing, so you just rest up and get yourself well. The first thing we're gonna have to do is clean you up a little, and then maybe we can see how bad you're wounded.
I don't think I'm torn up inside. At least I ain't spitting up no blood, but something's awful wrong in my side. I think I must have busted a rib or something.
Just lie back. Let me clean up some of that blood so I can see the wound. Oh, you've lost a hell of a lot of blood. Ain't no sense getting frisky till you build up your strength again.
After removing his shirt and cleaning the wound, Pearl held the lantern close to his side while she examined the seriousness of it. Then she rocked him halfway over on his side and took a look at his back.
You got 2 holes in you. I guess that's good news, unless you got shot twice.
Colt shook his head.
Well, it looks like the bullet went clear through. Now, I reckon we need a little drink.
She went to a cupboard in the kitchen and returned with a bottle of rye whiskey. She offered it to him, but he declined, thinking whiskey wouldn't sit too well on his stomach under the circumstances. She turned the bottle up and took a short drag.
Ooh, that's powerful stuff.
She then splashed it liberally over the 2 bullet holes.
Ow, damn! That's worse than getting shot.
My late husband said whiskey was good for a wound. Maybe he's right. His belly must have been plumb full of wounds, because he sure treated him regularly. I'll just wrap a bandage around you now. Then I'll scare you up something to eat.
Pearl, I can't tell you how much
Waste your breath. Just get yourself rested up. I reckon I just got a weakness for wounded critters.
True to Colt's prediction, Bert McCray had indeed become worried when his nephew didn't return. Finally, Bert and Bill Wilkes had set out into the night in search of him. They left Tom to watch over Susan, Rena, and Vance. Even in the dark, it was hard to miss the upturned buckboard and dead horse near the midpoint of Pronghorn Canyon. The moon, still high overhead, shone a faint light upon the scene of the ambush, with the supplies Colt had picked up scattered about the canyon floor.
I was afraid of that. He jumped him all right.
After searching a wide area around the wreckage, they found no trace of his nephew.
I reckon that's good we didn't find no body. You don't suppose we could have missed him on the way, him being on foot?
I don't see how we could have. Nah, he got away. Where the hell did he go? He might be hurt.
Well, maybe Drummond's men carried him off.
Well, they shot him right here. No, he's out there somewhere on foot. No telling where.
Bert looked around him again, trying to pierce the darkness. They searched both sides of the ravines in the shadows, but to no avail. It was too dark to pick up any hint of a trail. Finally, when the moon began its descent beyond the foothills, they admitted defeat.
We'll have to come back in the morning.
They managed to unhitch the buckboard from the carcass of the sorrel. Although it had suffered some damage, they were able to hitch Bill's horse to it and haul the supplies back to the Broken M.
You're looking a little more ornery than usual this morning, Pearl.
Do I? Well, might be there's a reason. For one thing, though, I'm sure tired as hell this morning. I've got a man in my bed for the first time since Henry died.
Pearl Murray, shut your mouth! Maybe I ought to start going to that church of yours.
Oh, it ain't as good as you think. I slept on a blanket on the floor.
Mary's smile turned to a look of puzzlement.
Colt McCrae is lying in my bed, shot through the side.
Mary took a step backward as if jolted off balance.
Who? How?
Drummond. At least some of Drummond's hired killers.
Pearl went on to relate the happenings of the night before, when they had hidden Colt under her feet in the church.
Oh, my Lord in heaven. How bad is he hurt?
I ain't really sure, but I don't think he's gonna die. At least he looked some better this morning. I reckon he needs a doctor, but I didn't think it was a good idea to try to get Dr. Taylor to come see him.
No, you're right. We can't take a chance on Oscar or J.D. finding out where he is. I'll come over to help you after work. I have to help Mama with supper first, but I'll slip out and get over to your place as soon as I can.
I figured you would.
Oscar walked into the room.
Figured you would what?
Put an extra cup of cow shit in the coffee pot.
I swear, Pearl, you got a worse mouth on you than some of them gals down at the body house.
Hell, if I was a little younger and a whole lot prettier, that's where I'd be. Probably make a whole lot more money.
The fever of the hunt was developing in the fearsome man known only as Bone. A keen-eyed tracker and a hunter of men, he prided himself on his unfailing ability to run his prey to ground, and his pleasure was the brutal execution of the victim. Over the years, his passion had become a game to him, in which he was pitted against his quarry, winner take all, and the stakes were a man's life. On this morning, he was more than a little bit irritable. It was galling him that he had not been successful in tracking down a wounded man on foot. Even though it had been at night, he should have run him to ground easily. Working alone now in the early morning light, he followed the obvious tracks that led away from the rim of the ravine. Here and there, he discovered smudges of dried blood where Colt had placed a hand on a rock or bush for support. So far, the trail was easy to follow as it led down toward a shallow creek running parallel to a deep gully rimmed with thick brush. Bone dismounted when he reached the edge of the gully. This was the place where he had lost the trail the night before. In the light of day, small patterns of blood were visible in the grass, telling Bone's experienced eye that his man had stopped there for a while. He tried to picture the wounded man as he had rested there. Bone liked to know everything about the prey he hunted. He had questioned Drummond extensively about the uncompromising ex-convict, and from what he'd been told, he knew why McCrae had chosen to run instead of standing to fight.
He was out of cartridges.
As he knelt beside the blood-stained grass, Bone scanned the wall of brush that lined the rim of the gully, looking for signs that might tell him McCrae had pushed through. Something caught his eye as it skimmed past, causing him to stop and look more closely. The sun had reflected off something metallic. Bone hurried to the spot. A slow smile formed on his whiskered face as he reached down and pulled a Winchester 73 rifle from under a serviceberry bush.
Well, now there's a nice little bonus.
The discovery of the weapon also told him that his quarry was hurt badly. Otherwise, he would hardly have knowingly left his rifle. Pushing through the brush, Bone walked carefully down the steep slope to the bottom of the gully, where he found more blood. Looking toward the end of the gully, he could see that it came out to a narrow road and the church beyond.
Son of a bitch.
McCray had in all likelihood made his way to the church and may have been hiding there after all.
That lying, Bible-thumping son of a bitch.
Pushing the church door open, Bones strode inside the empty building. As it was little more than a one-room cabin, there seemed to be no place to hide.
Maybe he didn't come here.
Walking toward the back of the room, he looked down the rows until his gaze stopped on a thin, dark streak running under the benches. Moving quickly down the row to get a closer look, he immediately confirmed his suspicion. It was dried blood. He traced it back two rows to its origin.
This is just about where that mouthy bitch stood up and told me to get the hell out of here.
He was not immediately angry. Instead, he smiled at the irony of having been buffaloed by the woman, knowing that in the end, he would have the last laugh. Outside the church, he looked around, searching for anything that might give him a clue as to where McCray went from there. In the small churchyard were many tracks from hooves, wagons, and buggies. It was a simple task to determine fresh tracks from old ones for a tracker of bone skill. The job made considerably easier because the ground was not yet frozen. All the vehicles went the same way from the churchyard. So he got on his horse and followed the narrow lane back to the road. It was there he had to make a decision, which he knew could be no more than a guess. Stepping down from the saddle again, he examined the clear tracks he was able to distinguish from the multitude left there, old and new, some going in one direction on the road, some the opposite. Finally, he decided upon the tracks cut by what he guessed to be a farm wagon, reasoning that it would be the natural thing to lay a wounded man in a wagon bed. Climbing back in the saddle again, he followed the wagon tracks, leaning low on the side of his saddle to keep his eyes sharply focused on the impression left by the wheels. In less than half a mile, several of the various tracks split, and the wagon tracks forked off on a narrow trail, making them much easier to follow. After approximately another mile, Bone topped a rise to discover a modest farmhouse tucked between a brace of cottonwoods on the opposite side of a narrow creek. He took a few moments to look the place over before riding in. At first glance, there appeared to be no one about. But while he watched, a man appeared in the entrance to the barn and walked toward the house, oblivious to him. Recognizing the man as the one he had called Preacher the night before, Bone cracked a satisfied smile and nudged his horse with his heels. Dewey Jenkins was just about to enter the house when he heard the horse and turned. The shock he had experienced the night before, when the dark intruder had suddenly stalked into the church, returned to freeze his heartbeat again. As sinister in the morning light as he had been in the dim lantern light of the church, the man looked to be the devil's special lieutenant. Dewey was stunned speechless. Bone's lip curled into a sneer. He casually threw a leg over and stepped down from the saddle. Standing before the porch steps, his long black coat open to reveal two pistols, he peered out from under his leather hat brim with eyes black as coal.
Hello, Preacher. I believe you've got something that belongs to me.
I'm sorry, sir. I don't rightly know what you mean.
Bone pulled his coattails apart to clear his gun butts.
Don't make me get nasty with you, Preacher. That wounded coyote you hid underneath the bench last night. Where is he?
There ain't no wounded man here.
Bones stepped up on the porch.
Is that a fact? Reckon I'll have to see for myself. Open the door.
He pushed the frightened man ahead of him as he forced his way inside.
Where is he?
Vera Jenkins came in from the kitchen and almost fell when her husband was shoved into her. Determined to find what he was convinced was there, Bone walked down the hallway and peered into the bedroom.
Where the hell is he?
Who?
You know damn well who. And I better find him goddamn quick. You're wasting my time.
He started toward the kitchen.
Hold it, mister.
Standing in front of Bone was Dewey's 14-year-old son. The boy, hearing the commotion in the hallway, had quickly run to fetch the shotgun over the fireplace. But before the startled boy could raise the shotgun, Bone drew both pistols.
Help me!
Vera Jenkins rushed to her fallen son. A widening stain of dark red blood spread across his woolen shirt as she cradled his head in her arms. Bone turned a casual head toward Dewey to judge his reaction to the slaying. The stunned father's eyes blind now with rage and grief, he charged toward the merciless killer.
You! You bastard!
Bone stepped deftly aside and struck Dewey on the back of his head with a pistol butt. The defenseless farmer went down hard. Bone walked over beside the woman and picked up the shotgun. Spotting a cake of cornbread on the table, he reached over and broke off half of it.
That's good.
He stood watching the woman cry as he casually ate the cornbread.
Where is he? Is he in the barn? I'll go have a look.
Bone turned and walked toward the door.
And brought it on himself. Shouldn't have come at me with the shotgun.
A few minutes later, Bone re-entered the house. Realizing then that he had wasted the morning by following the wagon tracks, he had flung Dewey's shotgun over into one of the stalls and stormed back to the house. He found the mother kneeling by her dead son.
You've wasted enough of my time, damn you! Now I want some answers. Who carried Colt McRae away from that church?
You son of a bitch!
Bone reached down and grabbed the woman by her hair. Dragging her away from her son's body, he stuck his pistol barrel against her cheek.
Now, by God, I'm fixing to send you to hell with your son if you don't tell me what I want to know.
Pearl! Pearl Murray! Pearl took him!
Who the hell is Pearl? Took him where?
She's the woman who told you to get out of the church. She took him to the doctor.
Bone released the woman.
The doctor, huh? Well, hell. I should have known to look there in the first place.